Please come to order.
Will members please indicate their presence by voting? Has any member failed to indicate their presence by voting? Will the clerk please take the roll?
37 members present.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Representatives Herman and Furness are excused from the call of the House today. However, note the presence of Representative Herman on the House floor. Excuse me, Mr. Speaker. Also, Representative Winty is excused from the call today.
Will the members please rise for the invocation by Reverend Milton Hunt, Resurrection Lutheran Church.
Let us pray. Let us pray to God to give us the seven virtues which men have always thought the greatest virtues of all. O God, our Father, give us the virtues which will make life strong and lovely. Fidelity, that we may be forever true to friendship, to love, and to you. Hope, that not all of earth's setbacks and disappointments may ever drive us to despair. Love, that we may feel towards our fellow men as you feel to them. Prudence, that we may be wise to choose not that which is at the moment attractive, but that which is to our ultimate good. Justice, that we may never be swayed by passion or by prejudice, but that in honor and honesty we may be fair to all men. Courage, that no cowardly or an unworthy fear may ever keep us from doing the right thing and taking the right road. Self-control, that we may be master of every impulse and of every passion, and so able to serve others because we can rule ourselves. So let your divine grace make beautiful our human life. Amen.
Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that this beautiful prayer be spread upon the journal.
Is there objection? Hearing none, the prayer will be spread upon the journal. Will the clerk please certify the journal for the 74th legislative day and House Supplement number 112?
As Chief Clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 74th day and House Supplement number 112.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the journal for the 74th legislative day and Journal Supplement number 112 be approved as certified by the Chief Clerk.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Are there guests for introduction? Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, this is both an announcement and an introduction, if you'd permit me. March, as you know, I think, is Women's History Month. And as a happy coincidence of that effect, of that circumstance, an all-woman jazz quintet from San Francisco is coming to Alaska to make its debut with a concert in Juneau this very weekend. The band is called Alive. They'll be appearing tomorrow night, Saturday, at the new A&B Hall at 8:30 p.m., and we have two members of that jazz quintet in the No Smoking Gallery this morning, Mr. Speaker. They are Janet Small, the pianist, and Rhiannon, the vocalist.
Are there further guests for introduction? Messages from the governor?
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the Senate.
The Senate approved the following citations, and they are transmitted for consideration. In memoriam Harold E. Pomeroy, and in memoriam Tito and Nina Pena. The Senate has passed committee substitute for House Bill number 84, Finance, with the following amendment. Senate committee substitute for committee substitute for House Bill 84, Finance, amended Senate, an act relating to smoking in public places and vehicles, and it is returned for consideration. The Senate passed committee substitute for House Bill 373, Labor and Commerce, non-forfeiture benefits of life insurance policies and reserve valuation standards for life insurance policies and annuity contracts, effective date, and it is returned. This bill has been sent to enrolling. The Senate has passed the following, and they are transmitted for consideration. Senate Bill 322 by Curtula, an act relating to the Alaska Agricultural Loan Board and providing for an effective date.
Senate Bill 322 is referred to the Resources and Finance Committees.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 342, Finance, by the Finance Committee, an act relating to the Alaska Agricultural Loan Act.
House Special Committee on State Loans, Resources, and Finance Committees.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 371, Resources, by the Resources Committee, An act relating to mining and providing for an effective date.
Resources and Finance Committees.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 383, Finance, by the Finance Committee. An act making special appropriations to the Department of Law and to the Department of Education for miscellaneous claims and providing for an effective date.
Finance Committee.
I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Other communications?
We are in receipt of the Fiscal Year 84 Annual Report from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. It will be on file in the Clerk's office. I have no further communications, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of standing committees.
The Committee on Finance has had sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 350 amended, creating the Alaska United States Olympic Trust Fund under consideration, and recommends it be replaced with House Committee substitute for sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 350 Finance with the same title, and it is reported back with individual recommendations and a new fiscal note. The report was signed by Mr. Adams, Chairman, signing Dupass, Adams, Bettesworth, and Ward, having no recommendation, Jaroff, Martin, Grusendorf, and Fritz. Sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 350 amended has no further referral. The Committee on Transportation has had House Bill 512, establishing the Alaska Railroad Corporation to manage and operate the Alaska Railroad under consideration, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 512, Transportation, with the same title, recommends it do pass and attaches a fiscal note. The report was signed by Ms. Cato, Chairman, concurred in by Abood, Herman, Bettesworth, M.W. Miller, Cato, and Flood, having no recommendation, McBride and Davis. House Bill 512 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. There is a letter of intent that was to accompany committee substitute for House Bill 518, Fisheries, which is the Fisheries Business Tax Credit, that has been received and signed by Adelaide Herman, Chairman of the House Special Committee on Fisheries. It will be referred to the Resources Committee. The Committee on Rules has had House Bill 519, relating to artworks in public buildings and facilities under consideration, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 519, Rules, with a new title, and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Fuller, Chairman, concurred in by Hayes, Tischer, Liska, and Fuller, signing do not pass, M.M. Miller, signing no recommendation, Phillips. House Bill 519 has no further referral. The Committee on Hess has had House Bill 548, relating to state assistance for community health aid programs under consideration, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 548 Hess with the same title, recommends it do pass and attaches a fiscal note. The report was signed by Ms. Tischer, Chairman, concurred in by Euling, Gall, Tischer, Pestinger, and Martin, having no recommendation, Kopanen and Davis. House Bill 548 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Committee on Finance has had House Bill 551, relating to the Delta Junction Bison Range, under consideration, recommends it be replaced with CS for House Bill 551, Finance, with a new title, recommends it do pass and attaches a new fiscal note. The report was signed by Mr. Adams, Chairman, concurred in by Adams, Bettesworth, Martin, Lindauer, Grusendorf, Ward, and Fritz. Jaroff signed do pass, Yahoo, Section 4. Duncan signed no recommendation. House Bill 551 has no further referral. The Committee on Finance has had House Bill 576, relating to a grant of state land to the City of Whittier under consideration, recommends it be replaced with CS for House Bill 576, Resources, with the same title, recommends it do pass and attaches a letter of intent and a fiscal note. The report was signed by Mr. Adams, Chairman, signing do pass, Adams, Bettesworth, Martin, Lindauer, Ward, and Fritz, having no recommendation, Grusendorf, Duncan, and Jaroff. House Bill 576 has no further referral. The Committee on State Affairs said House Bill 605, providing for the issuance of GO bonds in the amount of $100 million for the purpose of paying the cost of constructing a public facility to house the legislature and other state agencies in Anchorage, under consideration, and recommends it do pass and attaches a fiscal note. The report was signed by Mr. Abood, Chairman, signing do pass, Abood, Ward, Cowdery, and Larson. Locker signed do not bond, take pork. M.M. Miller signed do not pass. Schultz signed no recommendation. House Bill 605 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Committee on Finance is at House Bill 680, relating to the recovery and production of oil and natural gas, under consideration, recommends it be replaced with CS for House Bill 680, Labor and Commerce, with the same title, recommends it do pass, and attaches a new fiscal note. The report was signed by Mr. Adams, Chairman, concurred in by Adams, Bettesworth, Martin, Grusendorf, Jaroff, Ward, and Fritz. House Bill 680 has no further referral. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of special committees?
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of citations and resolutions.
Sponsor substitute for House Concurrent Resolution Number 53 by McBride, requesting the State Geographic Board to name an unnamed lake near Ketchikan as Ed Todd Lake.
Sponsor substitute for House Concurrent Resolution 53 is referred to the Resources Committee.
House Joint Resolution Number 73 by the Resources Committee by request, relating to the licensing of commercial halibut vessels in Alaska.
House Joint Resolution 73 is referred to the House Special Committee on Fisheries and the Resources Committee.
I have no further resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Brings us to consideration of the daily calendar. Representative Clarkson, will the House please stand at ease?
Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 33 amended by the Rules Committee, proposing an amendment to Rule 42A of the Uniform Rules of the Alaska State Legislature relating to powers of conference committees. The Committee on Rules has had Senate Concurrent Resolution 33 under consideration, recommends it be replaced with House Committee substitute for Senate Concurrent Resolution 33 rules with the same title, and reports it back due pass. The report was signed by Mr. Fuller, Chairman, concurred in by Hayes, Phillips, Barnes, Tischer, Liska, and Fuller. M.M. Miller has no recommendation. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent the Rules Committee substitute for Senate Concurrent Resolution 33 be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
There is objection. Representative Clarkson.
Parliamentary inquiry first. The question is what votes required. What votes required to adopt a CS and what vote is required to for final passage of this?
To adopt the CS, it takes the majority of those constituting a quorum. It's like any amendment.
Please, Mr. Speaker.
House, please stand at ease. Will the House please come back to order? Representative Clarkson, to adopt the committee substitute takes a majority of those present who constitute a quorum. Then to adopt the concurrent resolution will take two-thirds of the body of the membership of this body, 27, according to Rule 53. Representative Miller.
Well, Mr. Speaker, thank you. I rise in opposition to adoption of the House Rules Committee version. That committee met yesterday and made the committee substitute, replacing the Senate version. If I may, Mr. Speaker, what I'd like to do is say tell what's in the Senate version and then what's in the rules version, and indicate to you why I recommend that we stick with the Senate version. There is a problem at the present time when we have conference committees in that, say, for instance, Mr. Speaker, this body appropriated $100,000 for a particular project. The other body appropriated $500,000 for the same project. Under the current rules, according to Mr. Barrier, with whom I checked this as recently as this morning, and I agree with him, we have to choose either one figure or the other, even though both bodies may decide that a more equitable figure might be $250,000, someplace in between. We couldn't do it. And actually, that doesn't really make a lot of sense. So the Senate version of the bill, and I'm referring to the version that passed the floor of the House, SCR 33 amended, would allow a conference committee to arrive at either the figure that one House adopted or the other House or at some place in between. Now, that's what passed the other body. What passed, what came out of rules, House rules yesterday, was a version that goes a step further than that. And the step further would be this, that if one body, again, appropriated $250,000 or $500,000, another one appropriated $1 million, you could not only arrive at some place in between, but you could actually, if you wanted to, even zero out the appropriation. It could, you know, you could reduce it down to zero. Your only limitation would be that you couldn't appropriate more money than was in one version or the other, but you could eliminate the item entirely. Mr. Speaker, speaking just pragmatically as a member of the minority and emphasizing that this has not happened, and so I'm certainly not accusing the majority coalition of any skullduggery in this, because I don't believe there is any. But what can happen if this minority or some future minority, indeed, Mr. Speaker, I hope a year from now when I'm talking, I'll be talking as a member of the majority, some future minority might find themselves able to get an item into one House's version of the budget, perhaps even get it in the other, but yet when we get to the conference situation where that minority person is represented by one vote out of six, you know, the minority's position could be just, frankly, negotiated away. Even though that situation has not happened under the present situation, and that I certainly don't expect it to happen under this present situation, it's not a good situation, Mr. Speaker. If the two houses both agree in their respective bodies that an appropriation should be made, then I think it's only right and proper that an accommodation of adopting either one version or the other, or something in between, should be made. When to ignore the you know, well, not to ignore, but I think I've made the case, my position on the thing. It's very possible at some future time that a minority position could be completely zeroed out in the conference situation. And, of course, when the bills come back from a conference situation, all it requires is a majority vote of the of each House. I just frankly think that we're going too far. So, Mr. Speaker, my recommendation is, and the reason for my motion not to adopt the House Rules Committee version, is that the version originally sent to us by the other body is sufficient to take care of the problem that they identified when they originated the bill. It's sufficient to identify the problems that, you know, we all acknowledge exist, but that it goes too far. Therefore, my recommendation is that we not adopt the Rules Committee. And indeed, Mr. Speaker, if we did adopt the House Rules Committee version, it would be my recommendation to the 14 members of of the caucus that I represent, and also for that matter to other people in this body, that we not adopt the concurrent resolution. If we stick with the resolution that was passed by the other body, then I would see absolutely no reason. In fact, I would encourage all the members of this body to vote yes for the original Senate version. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Adams.
Thank you. If I may speak on the House Rules Committee substitute, this is the best version between the two bodies. The Senate version that you see before you amends Rule Number 42, which allows the Conference Committee to accept either the House or Senate item numbers. But now the House Committee substitute, which would allow the committee substitute to accept any figure between the higher of the Senate or the House or the number zero. But under no circumstances could any specific item be increased above the highest amount included the specific item in either the House or Senate versions. Let me tell you why we need this particular House Rules substitute. Because there's often duplications for a project within the same bill. Many times there's duplications within the department for the same project or program. Let's take, for instance, under the HES budgets, there are many duplications of funding for hepatitis in five different categories, and perhaps that you have over-duplicated there, and you need to reduce one of those numbers down to zero. Let's take another example that perhaps that the funds are available from another source to offset funds included in the budget bill. The best example of this would be through RPs, through budget and audit. There are many times we get federal funds for weatherization that we have put general funds into CRA, or perhaps for older Alaskans that under the administration budget that we had placed already general funds. These is duplications. I believe that this particular House CS takes care of that. I don't believe the debate by the minority leader that would hurt the minority's position in conference committee. They have a voice there, although it might be a weak voice. but they still have a voice in the conference committee. I believe also this particular Senate concurrent resolution would help in the time frame of shortening a session. That is because every time we run into a difference of a problem, we have to come before the president of the other body and the speaker of this house and ask for limited powers of free conference committee powers. And I think this is a good amendment, and I would urge members of 40 members here to vote for this particular resolution, as is in the House.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I also oppose the adoption of the House committee substitute for many of the reasons stated by the minority leader. In response to the finance chair using the example of hepatitis B needing to be zeroed out, of course, that's precisely why we have the authority to obtain limited powers of free conference. We're not talking here about absolutely forbidding a conference committee from going lower than the lowest figure or higher than the highest figure. We're just saying go public with it, submit a written report, and if you can get the Speaker or the President of the Senate to give you the approval for limited powers of free conference, you can do that. That's also the answer to the delay issue raised by the finance chair. That is, the delay involved in obtaining limited powers of free conference. We've done that a number of times already this session. Doesn't take very long at all. That's no big deal and not a particularly compelling argument. Mr. Speaker, I think it was 3 years ago that we approved what I consider to be the only real budget reform that has occurred since I've been in the legislature, and that is the revision of the rules with regard to the free conference committee and the budget. That was good budget reform, and it limited the power of a conference committee. Mr. Speaker, if you adopt the House committee substitute, you will essentially be eliminating the effort we submitted toward budget reform 3 years ago. If you care about budget reform, you will not adopt the House committee substitute. Granted, it will not allow you to go higher without powers of free conference, but it will allow you to go down to zero. It will allow you to zero out the municipal assistance or revenue sharing, or it will allow you to zero out any number of categories when that matter was not considered at all by either body of the legislature. And that's important, Mr. Speaker. That's the principle behind this reform, is that the bodies ought to consider it. And if they didn't consider it, the conference committee can't do it until they get permission from the body. That's good budget reform, and you're going to gut it, Mr. Speaker, if you adopt the House committee substitute to this resolution.
Are you ready for the question?
Question.
Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, just one other point, too. If for some reason or the conference committee didn't want to take the additional 30 minutes that perhaps it would take to get limited powers of free conference from the Speaker of the Senate or the Senator, or if we're very late in the game that some duplication was adopted, it is, of course, always available to the executive to redline out any duplications. And indeed, I have yet to find an executive who has sat on the third floor that wouldn't leap at the opportunity to do that. So I don't think that the duplication matter is a matter of substance. Again, I recommend that we do not adopt the Rules Committee substitute. In order that we may be able to pass the Senate version as it was passed to us.
Representative Adams.
The minority leader stated something about the third floor on red lighting duplications. I don't think that particular floor is smart enough to know duplications.
Question. Are you ready for the question? Representative Malone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's hard for me to imagine how the last remarks of the previous speaker relevant to the legislation, but Speaker, I just want to say that I think it's probably a little bit of a step backwards, you might say, to adopt the original resolution as far as public involvement and public knowledge of the process, but taking the House resolution, I think it'd be going too far, and I would recommend members vote no on the motion and proceed with the original bill.
Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the House Rules Committee substitute for Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 33 be adopted in lieu of the original bill? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
22 yeas, 15 nays.
House Rules Committee substitute has been adopted in lieu of the original bill. Representative Clarkson, will the House please stand at ease? Will the House please come back to order? Does the clerk have amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Is there debate? Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the House Rules Committee substitute for Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 33 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
22 yeas, 15 nays.
The House Rules Committee substitute for Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 33 has failed to pass the House. Will the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
Citation honoring the Village Public Safety Officers Program graduates by Representatives Hurlburt, Grusendorf, Herman, Fritz, McBride, and Jaroff.
Representative Gall?
Excuse me, Mr. Speaker. I neglected to send in a sheet, and I was wondering if my name could be added as a co-sponsor at this time.
Without objection, Representative Gall will be added as a co-sponsor of the citation. Representative Hurlburt? Is there objection? Hearing none, the citation is approved. This brings us to the end of today's calendar and unfinished business. Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, could we be at ease?
The House, please stand at ease. Unfinished business. Representative Bussell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Under unfinished business. Mr. Speaker, as you know, recently you appointed a House side of a conference committee which was to discuss and try to reach agreement on the differences that exist between the philosophy of the House and the philosophy of the Senate as they pertain to legislation now in the legislature, specifically committee substitute for Senate Bill 257. Last week, the chairman of the Senate side of that committee did circulate a number of proposed amendments that the Senate wanted to discuss, and subsequently called a meeting of that committee for the purpose of discussing those and other amendments that maybe the House members wished to advance at that time in the hopes of reaching some accord, mutual accord. As you know, Representative Martin and Representative Flood and myself make up the House side of that committee. We did meet as you know, and if other members of the body don't know, we did meet at 3 o'clock yesterday in the House Judiciary Room to discuss those items. I thought the House Committee, Representative Flood, portrayed himself in an extremely gentlemanlike manner, did attempt to discuss a number of issues. Representative Martin portrayed himself or acquitted himself in a very fine manner, and did try to discuss other areas of concern of both his as well as the other bodies. The chairman of the Senate side at that point advanced a statement that he didn't feel that we could had any problem with any part of the bill with the exception of the public member parts of it, and pretty much told the assemblies that we were going to accept the sitting executive of the APOC board as the single public member, and asked me what I thought, and I told him that I thought the House's position, and unless I misunderstood it, this is what I thought it to be, was that we we would have trouble with that sitting member of the APOC, probably as a single public member, and would like to probably expand it, rather than to close up the selection of public members. I then suggested that possibly we consider more public members, maybe from other geographic areas of the state, to expand that board, and cited an offering that I had made to cover other matters that he may wish to consider as they pertain to this legislation, i.e. a letter that I circulated to this body and the other body yesterday morning, to which the chairman of the other body closed his files and jumped up and stormed from the room and said if that was our opinion and our decision, he saw no need to continue discussion, would have to ask that the body be discharged. I don't know, Mr. Speaker, the status of that. There was no vote taken in the meeting. I think I generally speak for the other two members, although I haven't talked to them this morning, that we're perfectly willing to continue that dialogue to try to reach accord if it's still a desire of the other body to do so. And that's all I have to report, Mr. Speaker. I don't know the present status. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
For the information of the body, I have received word that the other body has discharged their conference committee relating to Senate Bill 257, which has a title dealing with standards of conduct for legislators, and they have appointed a new conference committee consisting of Senator Ferguson, Chairman, Senator Kelly, and Senator Bennett. So at this time, I will appoint a new House committee consisting of Representative Barnes, Chairman, Representative Tischer, and Representative Szymanski. Representative Martin?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. May I have the moment to express an opinion on the subject at hand, special orders?
We're not down to special orders yet.
How did you get the floor?
Well, it's unfinished business.
Oh, unfinished business, wasn't it?
Well, assuming it's unfinished business,
yes,
Representative.
Yes, it's unfinished in the sense.
State your point, Representative.
I don't have any objection to it. I think the appropriate thing would be to move to special orders for that specific purpose. Unfinished business isn't the place. I have no objection to moving to special orders, but.
Yes, sir. It's unfinished business, sir, if I may say.
Well, let's see if it's unfinished business. Otherwise, I would like to take special orders in their proper place, unless there is some overriding urgency to get it out of on the floor earlier in the day, like advising us that the building's on fire or something like that. Representative Martin?
Well, it's advice, sir, and only in the sense is that is there a standing order from the House pertaining to the conference committee point of view on ethics? And this is where we're getting hung up at. If the Senate has it in their mind that in no way, shape, or form, if there's going to be a public amendment except the one they want, then there's no use in continuing meeting. And I think it should be made clear what is the House stand on the open committee. And that's why I say it's unfinished. If we continue like this, it's just a matter that, you know, who in the Senate the next time we're going to come out and said, this is our line, this is it. If you don't waver from your side, we don't waver from my side. Amen. And I think we should make it clear what is the House standing right now as far as public meetings, public members.
Unfinished business. Representative Vasca.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I would like to bring up the reconsideration of Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 504.
Will the clerk please read the bill?
Committee substitute for House Bill 504, financed by the Finance Committee. An act establishing the Teacher Scholarship Loan Program and providing for an effective date. I have two amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Vasca.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that we return to second reading for the purposes of a specific amendment.
There is objection. Will the clerk please read the amendment?
Amendment number 2 by Mr. Vasca, page 3, line 20, after board, add daycare.
Representative Vasca.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, amendment number 2 simply adds daycare to one of the uses that the students can use for their scholarship loans. The Again, I would like to commend the sponsors of this particular piece of legislation and simply add that the proceeds from the scholarship loans may be used for a variety of things. Books, tuition, required fees, room and board, and transportation expenses twice between the student's home and his place of education, school. Mr. Speaker, I think that opening the door slightly to parents who want to pursue a higher education in teaching should be done. Unfortunately, I notice also that this particular concern does not exist in the scholarship loan program as it presently exists. However, I think that in view of the circumstances of many students in the rural villages, as defined by this particular piece of legislation, communities under 4,500 people, the importance of daycare begins to show itself. Mr. Speaker, I don't think we should limit the use or limit the students who go to pursue a higher education. And I think parents who do have children and who will look for daycare assistance, if not in this state, in other states where they may happen to be going to school, will find use for daycare assistance and should be allowed to use this money for that purpose. I think it will contribute immensely, and I consider this to be a friendly amendment, Mr. Speaker.
Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 504, which is before us under reconsideration and third reading, be returned to second reading for the purpose of a specific amendment, amendment number 2. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? The clerk may take the roll.
14 yeas, 22 nays.
The motion to return to second reading for the purpose of adopting amendment number 2 has failed. The clerk does have amendment number 3 on her desk. Representative Vasca.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that we return to second reading for the purpose of a specific amendment.
Will the clerk please read the amendment?
Amendment number 3 by Mr. Vasca. Page 3, line 24. After school, add or received a general education diploma.
Representative Vasca.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the purpose of this amendment is simply to expand the eligibility of students who may not have finished high school in the villages, but in the state, who live in the villages, but who may instead pursue a general education diploma. I think, Mr. Speaker, you are trying really hard to address a specific problem in the state of Alaska, especially in the rural villages. Mr. Speaker, I think you understand, or at least the statistics in both the HES committee and in the Finance Committee will bring out that there is an extremely high dropout rate in the state of Alaska. If, in fact, you're interested in providing for opportunities for education for students, potential students in those communities, then you should expand that to students who pursue a high school diploma or an equivalency of a high school diploma. Perhaps they want to continue their education. Perhaps they want to be eligible for this teacher scholarship loan. To cut them out shows a lack of understanding of what is going on in the villages. The dropout rate is in excess of 60% at the high school level. Many of those students, through a variety of programs provided for by this state, especially adult basic education, provide the opportunity for many of these people to get a general education diploma. They too should be eligible for a teacher scholarship program. I think it's a good idea, and I also think it provides them that added opportunity to go out into the academic world, get an education, and come back to their communities. Thank you.
Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 504, which is before us under consideration in third reading, be returned to second reading for the purpose of a specific amendment, amendment number 3, members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
16 yeas, 20 nays.
The motion to return to second reading for the purpose of a specific amendment has failed to pass the House. Representative Vasca.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Under discussion of the bill.
You have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, so far there's been very little discussion about the bill as it stands, but I would like to commend the sponsors of the piece of legislation because it shows an attempt by this body to provide for some incentives for village students to pursue a higher education and to come back to the communities to teach. I don't disagree with that. As a matter of fact, I voted for the piece of legislation yesterday, and I probably will vote for the piece of legislation today. 3 days ago, I was on a talkback program with students from Seldovia, Anchorage, Fairbanks, Kotzebue, and Palmer, and they were specifically interested in this piece of legislation and wondered why this kind of legislation was not addressed to their concerns. Except for Kotzebue and Seldovia, this bill doesn't apply to Anchorage, Palmer, and Fairbanks, and Juneau. I tried to explain some of the findings in this piece of legislation that led to this body's providing the opportunity for students to go out and obtain a higher education. Their view of this piece of legislation was that it was discriminating against them for their opportunity to get a higher education. The fact that we explained to them that there was already a student scholarship loan program available to them did not matter. They were more concerned about the fact that this piece of legislation drew specific lines around specific communities to define who would be eligible. I think they understood to some extent some of the problems that this piece of legislation identifies in the rural areas, and especially with Native students in small communities. I don't know what the intent of Section 3 is, which states that the local school district will define some conditions, or the local school board will define some conditions for the student's education. That presumably will be left up to the Department of Education, the Board of Education, or the school boards. I don't see any intent behind this section, but it says that the local school boards will draw up some conditions for the student in pursuing his or her education. Mr. Speaker, I offer the two amendments to continue to show that, yes, there are major problems that this legislation is not addressing. It's one step in many that need to be taken. And the many steps that need to be taken need to show a clear, well-intended direction. What doesn't show here, what I have not heard, is the extreme high dropout rate among rural students, especially among Alaska Native students, not only in their own schools, in their villages, but also in the urban schools. The dropout rate is extremely high. The first step that's being taken by this piece of legislation, Mr. Speaker, should address the whole problem at hand. The problem includes parents who want to pursue a higher education but may not be able to because they don't have daycare assistance available to them. Or if, in fact, they are eligible for this state's daycare assistance, they're limited to the education opportunities of this state. This legislation ignores the many students who do not complete a high school education in the villages. They drop out for one reason or another, but later on pursue a general education diploma under the state statutes. This piece of legislation does not meet their needs. I think it should. And that is why I offered Amendment Number 3, and it was voted down. Mr. Speaker, I'm heartened to see that you're taking interest in rural students' problems, especially Alaska Native students' problems. We've identified some general problems in the legislation, but we're not identifying specific problems that could help these students. I happen to agree with the legislation. I, in fact, will vote for it. There's no doubt in my mind. But I think we should expand it slightly to include those students who we're trying to reach now. The students with a general education diploma. It takes a certain amount of incentive to get to that point. We should continue to offer them further incentives to come back to their communities and teach. I hope we've not lost a lot of students because of this, and hopefully we can amend this later on to meet those needs so that we ensure that our students in the small communities are coming back. Because those very problems you identify in the findings of this piece of legislation are real. Thank you.
This time I'm going to ask the majority leader for a motion to recess until 12 o'clock. We do have a long-standing date with the governor for the Anchorage delegation, and we're going to be late if we continue. I understand from something we just passed up on my desk, there will be at least one special order, and we're not finished with the debate on this. Representative Barnes? Till 12.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Move and ask unanimous consent the House stand in recess till 12 o'clock.
Is there objection? Hearing none, the House stands in recess till 12 o'clock. We have House Bill 504 before us in third reading under reconsideration, and this time I'm going to place a call of the House on the bill. Representative Herman?
Mr. Speaker, may we revert to introduction of guests, please?
Without objection, we'll revert to introduction of guests. Representative Herman?
In Gallery B, I'd like to introduce to the body Leland Dishman from the Pribilof School District.
Representative Tischer?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In order to expedite time, could we go up to announcements of committee meetings while we're waiting for the call to be satisfied or not? I'm just trying to
Without
save time here.
Without objection from the minority leader, we could.
I'm just trying to save some time.
The question was, in order to make good use of our time while we're waiting for Representative Gall and others to show up, because I think he wanted to debate this bill, could we move down to an announcement of committee meetings? Without objection, Representative Tischer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Today, the House Health, Education, and Social Services Committee will be meeting in Room 112 to hear three bills, House Bill 617, which is Supplemental Appropriation to State Council of the Arts, Senate Joint Resolution 26, which is Training for Physicians, and Senate Concurrent Resolution 26, which is Feasibility of Creating Local Advisory Boards. Given the time of day, Mr. Speaker, I hesitate to announce the exact time the meeting will begin. It will begin 5 minutes after we adjourn.
Further announcements of committee meetings. Representative Ringstad.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Resources Committee meeting will be canceled this afternoon as the bill we had up was dealt with earlier in the week.
Representative Cowdery.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Labor and Commerce Committee will be meeting never mind. Wrong.
Representative Bussell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In view of some of the remarks that we just heard upstairs, I think I should announce that today at an all-day session, the Permanent Fund Board is meeting in the Gold Building, and I was advised by it's the director down there that no legislator has ever attended a Permanent Fund Board meeting, and I think it might be good for all legislators to note that is going on. There is a legislative and public comment period on the agenda, and it's later this afternoon. Anybody that can attend, I think they should. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Szymanski?
Just to set the record straight, I have attended a few of those board meetings, and maybe I missed being recognized. Thank you.
See a number of hands. Testimonials. Representative Adams?
Thank you. Under announcements, Mr. Speaker, CRA closeout will begin at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning, and Hess closeout will start at 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Representative Duncan?
We're having a day's place.
Will the House please stand at ease? Announcements. Representative Cowdery.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to announce the Labor and Commerce will be having a work session on the Board of Barbers and Hairdressers Monday in the Barron's Building, 8:15.
Further announcements? Special orders? Representative Flood.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request the privilege of the floor to speak on there's a time to laugh and a time to cry.
You have the floor, Representative Flood.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First of all, I want to thank my fellow representative from Anchorage for calling me a gentleman on the floor of the House. I fully agree with his assessment and want to compliment him on his perception. But I also want to express my disappointment that the Conference Committee on Ethics legislation ended on a sour note. I felt that we could have worked out some of the major differences between the House and Senate versions of the bill. Unfortunately, the reason the committee was dissolved was over a dispute on a frivolous amendment. Now, while humor has its place in the legislative process, indeed, at times it's absolutely essential, wise use of humor should be encouraged, as a matter of fact, in this body. But I don't think that sensitive negotiations on legislative ethics is the place for humor. Indeed, the result of some ill-timed humor yesterday was the dissolution of the Ethics Conference Committee. Now, the public doesn't perceive ethics on the part of public officials to be humorous. And I believe that pursuit and passage of ethics legislation is one of the most important goals of this session. And I happen to find it decidedly unhumorous that to a certain extent we're now moving backwards and abandoning the gains that we've made over the past couple of weeks. Each member has a copy of the amendments offered by the Senate and the House on their desks, and you can be the judge as to who was acting in a responsible manner. Mr. Speaker, I know why the Conference Committee was dissolved, and I think many members of this body know why it was dissolved, and I hope that ill-timed humor does not delay the business of the body the way it's delayed the business of the Ethics Conference Committee. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further special orders? Representative Ward?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like the privilege of the floor to speak on legislative halls.
You have the floor, Representative Ward.
Thank you. I think it's only fitting that I bring to the entire body I found is a very productive meeting at 11:30 for those members who were not able to attend, and also to make it a part of the record with the governor. The governor at that time stated to us that the legislative hall in Juneau, with some criteria, would not be continuing until that criteria is met, one of those things being legislative approval. He at that time also included within that the Anchorage office building, which will also include a legislative hall, I'm sure. And for that, because at least it will have legislative approval, it's almost to the point of voter approval, I would like to commend that I think this body has done a very admirable job, and I think that we have done the people's business and are at least attempting to do it. Thank you.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I request the privilege of the floor to speak on Susitna and the Major Projects Fund.
You have the floor, Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, the Anchorage Daily News for this morning, which was just placed on our desk a few minutes ago, has a lead headline, $1.5 billion Susitna Project Fund proposed. I'm a bit surprised by that headline, Mr. Speaker. If you read the article, it indicates that the proposal was made by you. Mr. Speaker, yesterday the Anchorage Caucus met on this subject. I think most of you are aware of that. Almost half of you were there. A resolution was offered on this issue to the Anchorage Caucus, and the resolution was approved. by the vast majority of those who were present from the House part of the Anchorage caucus. Mr. Speaker, nowhere in that resolution appears a proposal for $1.5 billion for the Susitna project. I was concerned about that, Mr. Speaker, and therefore I checked with two members who attended the task force meeting yesterday. This is the task force working on the four dam pools Susitna Major Projects Fund issue. And both of those members indicated to me, Mr. Speaker, that you came into that meeting and offered a proposal that included the provision of rate stabilization funds. That's essentially what the $1.5 million, or at least a portion of it was, Mr. Speaker. In addition, offered a suggestion with regard to the power fund. At any rate, two proposals, Mr. Speaker, that were not a part in any way of the resolution that was approved by the Anchorage caucus. For those of you that are interested, the Anchorage caucus approved a resolution which said that the Anchorage caucus would agree to the repeal of the Susitna equity clause under two conditions. First, that funds for major hydroelectric projects are constitutionally assured. On that one, I asked the question, does that mean that the Susitna Equity Clause would not be repealed until November when the people voted for this constitutional amendment? The answer was yes. And the second condition was that Susitna be included in the energy program for Alaska. People who may not be familiar with that process, that basically means a vote to authorize that Susitna go forward. It triggers a lot of steps. And so that in no way is, by placing them in the energy program for Alaska, no way is it authorization for the expenditure of money specifically. Mr. Speaker, you'll recall at that Anchorage caucus meeting, I specifically asked the question, are the issues of the rate stabilization fund or the power development fund addressed in this resolution? And the answer to that was no, Mr. Speaker. And now I hear from two members who sit on the task force, and now I read in the front page of the Anchorage Daily News, that in fact the proposal that was delivered to them has those items in it. Mr. Speaker, I'm concerned about that. I just want to clarify for the information of people who may not have been listening in the Anchorage caucus or who did not attend that meeting because they don't live at Anchorage, that that is not the position that was voted on by the Anchorage caucus. Anchorage caucus voted on something much more restricted, and in fact, I asked that specific question, and the answer was no. Now, I hasten to add, in the article, there's no reference to the Anchorage caucus, but it is a proposal delivered by you, Mr. Speaker. The other point I want to make about this, following our noon meeting, I received a telecopied message from Commonwealth North, Mr. Speaker, and I assume other people got a copy of this. I did. I did yesterday afternoon, and I assume others did. Put very simply, I can pass this out if people want, but put very simply, Commonwealth North are the people that probably are the first advocates that I'm aware of the principle of a major projects fund. And they have come down very strongly in this message opposed to a proposal like the proposal that was approved by the Anchorage caucus and would be opposed, if you can believe this, to the proposal submitted to the task force by you, Mr. Speaker. They're the original advocates for the Major Projects Fund, and I think that their point of view ought to be taken into account. Along that same line, Mr. Speaker, it raises questions in my mind. If people as supportive as Commonwealth North don't want it, what's the problem? And so I went back to look at some of the studies, surveys that have been done recently, including the one, Mr. Speaker, by yourself, a survey released at the beginning of the session by MultiQuest 26, Dittman Research Corporation. Two questions were asked. One was, what do you think about a major projects fund? And there was a very high response to that, real strong support for that, Mr. Speaker. And secondly, a question about funding for Susitna. And if you'll read that report, you'll find that the support for the funding of Susitna dropped off considerably from that support for the Major Projects Fund. In fact, the issues were ranked in the order of positive response. The Capital Investment Fund, which is the same as a major projects fund, was at the top of the list. The funding of the Susitna application for license and design at $75 million, certainly something slightly under the $1.5 billion here, was third from the bottom in terms of its support in that survey. The question specifically, there was the breakdown for South Central Alaska, for example, had one quarter of the people in South Central Alaska, or 24% to be precise, opposing any funding for the Susitna project. And then breakouts for design and licensing. Again, the question was only $75 million, not $1.5 billion. Mr. Speaker, my fellow representative in District 12 also did a survey, which he released to this body, which asked the question, if a sensible plan to finance construction of Susitna can be found, do you support it? 61.6% said yes. That's fine, Mr. Speaker, but... The proposal that we have here, which is a proposal for a constitutional amendment, requires approval statewide. And I'm concerned, regardless of how each of us feels on the Susitna project, I am concerned that a constitutional amendment that essentially puts the question of Susitna, a referendum on Susitna, on the ballot right now, may very well go down to defeat. If only 61.6% of the people in my district support a sensible plan for Susitna, that's pretty clear for my district, but what does that mean for the rest of the state where Susitna would have absolutely no beneficial effects? So, Mr. Speaker, this has been sort of rambling. The first question is, I'm concerned that the task force not be misled with regard to the Anchorage caucus position. The Anchorage caucus has not voted on $1.5 billion for Susitna, and I specifically asked and was indicated that was not part of the resolution. Secondly, people whose opinion I respect, who are supporters of development, have indicated they are opposed to a part of the package for Susitna. And thirdly, Mr. Speaker, if you review some of the opinion polls that are available, there's some serious question, if you are a supporter of Susitna, whether the package is wise. So with that, Mr. Speaker, I would hope that you would reconsider your position.
Representative Barnes?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May I have the privilege of the floor to speak on Susitna and the energy package?
You have the floor, Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. At the beginning of yesterday's Anchorage caucus, the chair, the beginning as it relates to the energy package, the chair of the committee presented to the total caucus a package that outlined the proposals that are presently before our negotiating team dealing with the Susitna equity clause and the options for that, the rate stabilization fund, the four down pool price of power computations, and policy decisions that needed to be made to each one of those. The power cost assistance clause, which would make it possible to get reasonable power rates in rural Alaska. And then finally, the last page of that dealt with current statutory provisions. And in addition to that, there was a resolution. The resolution was voted on by the Anchorage caucus, as laid out by the member from downtown Anchorage. Although in the discussion of this proposal by the chairman yesterday, she did very clearly lay out, no one misunderstood, that we were dealing with a total package, a package that we must reach before we can pass the resolution that was spoken to by the gentleman from downtown Anchorage. This includes, how do we deal with the Susitna equity clause beyond putting it into the resolution? And the language that we discussed yesterday for the resolution on the governor's priority would not identify Susitna, but rather would set aside a portion of the money, up to 50% for hydro development in the state. And beyond that, we discussed the need to either appropriate $35 or $49 million to pay off the rate stabilization for the four dam pool. And then beyond that, we discussed putting aside some $200 million out of $1.5 billion beginning this year to help defray the rate stabilization of Susitna when it should be built. Now, the gentleman that just spoke, I think, would lead you to believe that the speaker misled someone. That is not the case. This total package was presented yesterday to the Anchorage Caucus because we feel that the Anchorage Caucus as a whole should know all of the parts to the package that is being dealt with as it relates to Susitna. You cannot have a one-part program. You must look to the total package. The bottom line is what we dealt with yesterday in the resolution. The bottom line being, shall we give up the Susitna equity clause without something as good or better in its place? And the answer has been, we will not give up the Susitna equity clause without something good or better in its place. And that's what the resolution says. And beyond that, we have to look to equity as we have contributed equity to the four dam pool. That's where the $1.5 billion Susitna fund comes in. That's the equity based on pro rata share of individuals living in the community served by the four dam pool plus those that would be served with the Susitna or Watonna Dam project. I believe that to have people think that the speaker misled someone is misleading in itself. We spent quite a bit of time dealing with this yesterday, and anybody that is now not cognizant of the facts and would like a copy of what was handed out and what was discussed yesterday, I'd be pleased to make that available to them. And with that, Mr. Speaker, could we please return to unfinished business?
Representative Vasca?
Is there a call in the House?
Yes, there is.
The chairman of the State Affairs Committee walked out.
He didn't walk out. He sent up a note. He said he had to go to the bathroom, and I looked at the sergeant of arms and nodded my head, and the sergeant of arms nodded his head to the two pages standing by the door. Representative Coxon?
Mr. Speaker, if I could just have a brief response to the majority leader, and then I'd withdraw my objection to go back to unfinished business.
You have the floor, Mr. Appropriate.
On the same subject then, Mr. Speaker?
You have the floor.
Mr. Speaker, the 17 or so people on this floor who were there, of course, know what happened. There was a list of alternatives that was proposed. One of those alternatives was the expenditure in the Power Development Fund. The idea would be the legislature would appropriate a deposit of $1.5 billion into the Power Development Fund. And then there's another discussion here of a possible alternative of using the Rate Stabilization Fund, and that was discussed. Those were alternatives discussed, Mr. Speaker. I think that my point is made best by the fact that they were alternatives that were discussed. I made a point of asking, are those alternatives a part of what we're voting on, and was told no. Now, Mr. Speaker, I'm not contending that you intended to mislead anybody. Let me make that clear. That would be inappropriate on this floor. The fact is, I walked out of there, and I suspect a number of others walked out of there, thinking that we understood what the Anchorage Caucus position was. You then delivered a proposal to the task force, Mr. Speaker, that was different than that position. Now, you certainly have the right to do that, but I want members of this floor to know that that isn't the proposal that was approved by, I believe, 16 members of the Anchorage Caucus. And if that's the way it was delivered to the task force on this problem, then that is incorrect. On the $1.5 billion, Mr. Speaker, I'm gradually understanding what the proposal is. The proposal is not to appropriate $1.5 billion to help construct Susitna. The proposal is to appropriate $1.5 billion into the Rate Stabilization Fund to subsidize energy rates for Susitna. Now, I have to admit I'm a little confused, Mr. Speaker, because if Susitna is such a feasible project, why do we have to appropriate $1.5 billion for it? I mean, we're in a crack right now because because we're having to appropriate rate stabilization funds to the four dam pool because we made a mistake there. There's some sort of acknowledgement here, Mr. Speaker, that we're about to make the same mistake maybe with regard to the Susitna project. $1.5 billion, Mr. Speaker, not construction money, it's subsidy to rates in the rail belt. You've got to subsidize rates in the rail belt. You better review the feasibility of the project.
Representative Bussell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'll try to go over once again what I thought was abundantly... Oh, forgive me. May I have the speaker, or the privilege of the floor to speak on the sentence, please?
You have the floor, Representative Bussell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, perhaps I can once again try to recall for the representative from downtown Anchorage what got said yesterday. And maybe he'd like to sit down and really talk about it instead of continuing to raise rhetoric about it. We very clearly, or at least in my mind yesterday, and I think it was to the majority of the people there, I'm sorry if it wasn't to his mind, very clearly laid out precisely how or what had to be done or what we thought had to be done within general limits described as framework, which were contained in the resolution. No one, or at least I didn't, and I don't think anyone else, maybe he did, left that room with the idea that what was the language embodied in that resolution were set down in concrete, and that's what was going to happen. We talked about those describing terms of what was generally necessary and would allow the negotiation team to go together and reach conclusions that would be reached after negotiations. And the amount of rate stabilization necessary in the early years of operation of Susitna for the rail belt are indeed a necessary thing and may well reach that amount of money. I don't know. Otherwise, the building of Watana or any part of Susitna is not going to be possible. It's not going to be a feasible project. I hope that helps him understand. And I'd like to also comment with respect to the article newspaper. I hadn't had an opportunity to read it before he got on the floor, but he's so fond of pointing out key words, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to point out a couple key words in that article. In the third line into the article, a key word in that sentence might be may. It doesn't say the Speaker of the House said. It said may. It may be necessary this session in order to help untangle these messes. Later on in the article, it points out that the President of the Senate and the Senate, as well as the Senate resource person, is working on proposals for possible Susitna appropriations. In the back part of the article, a key to this thing is maybe on the second column there, and I'll read it to you, and maybe it'll help you understand why some of this is necessary. It says the House and Senate and Governor's Office of Negotiations are scrambling this week to find a solution to the complex web of financial problems plaguing hydroelectric development in Alaska. It doesn't say Susitna, it says in Alaska. And it's all part of it. I don't believe you can read any one part of these separate and distinctly by itself. Then it goes on to say Sheffield, I presume they're referring to our Governor Sheffield, has threatened to veto millions of dollars in public construction projects approved by the legislature unless progress is made on major legislation that must be passed this session, including bills to deal with hydroelectric financing snags. And then it goes underneath there to say the goal of the legislatures are, or of the negotiators are too, and it spells out several other goals. I hope the representative from downtown Anchorage is joining in that effort and trying to reach those solutions, because there's certainly an awful large part of the body working towards that end. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Kopanen.
Mr. Speaker, request permission of the floor to speak on enlightenment.
You have the floor, Representative Copeland.
Thank you. I would like to extend my gratitude to the members who have been discussing this, not being a member of either the Anchorage delegation or of the majority caucus. I'm still trying to follow the complexity of the schemes being brought forward here. I think I'm beginning to grasp some of them, however they elude my grasp as I look at them. They do remind me somewhat of the instructions that we get on the children's toys that, as parents, we are asked to assemble on Christmas morning. You know, those things that are too complex for any adult to ever figure out. Or the cartoon that some of us may remember from our youth, the Rube Goldberg inventions, where, for instance, to wake up in the morning, the candle burned down through a string which releases a bowling ball which goes down a rain gutter which falls on the roof of the dog house, which then the dog leaping forward, scaring the cat, which then jumps on the bed. I have a certain feeling for simplicity, a certain thing that feeling that maybe some of these questions really are severable, and we can, when we are faced with problems, maybe the easiest way out of them is to take them one at a time. Thank you.
Representative Duncan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May I have the privilege of the floor to speak on double blackmail?
You have the floor, Representative Duncan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I really hesitate to get involved in this, but it's beginning to get so interesting I can't stay out of it. Mr. Speaker, I hear the majority leaders and others talking about the Susitna Equity Clause. Mr. Speaker, she was in the legislature, and I was in the legislature when that clause passed, and it wasn't the Equity Clause, and I wanted to get that straight. It was the Blackmail Clause, and still is. At that time, Mr. Speaker, it was the Susitna Blackmail Clause because the provision was that we had to appropriate $5 billion by 1991 for the construction of Susitna. Mr. Speaker, that was the blackmail at that time. I now believe we're being double blackmailed. In order to resolve the four-dam pool situation in throughout Alaska, to resolve the energy problem we have now, we're being told two things. Part of the package will be to pass a constitutional amendment, which is a major projects fund, which is going to ensure money for the construction of Wautauna Dam by taking 10% of certain revenues and putting them into a major projects fund for hydroelectric. So that blackmail is going ahead because until we pass that, we can't repeal the blackmail clause. And now we had a second added portion to that package, a $1.5 billion appropriation to subsidize down the rates. So not only are we being blackmailed to build a dam that's not feasible, a project that's not economically feasible, we're now being told before we can repeal the first clause in order to solve the energy problem in the rest of the state, we've got to appropriate $1.5 billion to subsidize down the rates. Doesn't make any sense. The gentleman from Anchorage, I don't know what part of Anchorage he's from, but he's from up there somewhere, who's chairman of the Judiciary Committee, did say on the floor, and I appreciate him saying that, it was very clear, and I hope that stays on the record, that if we don't appropriate $1.5 billion to subsidize electrical costs, Susitna is not feasible. I think that's a true statement. And I think that's why we should stop this headlong rush towards trying to build a project that's not economically feasible. And we're tying ourselves into two things. One, a major dedication of revenues to build the project. And secondly, a long-term appropriation of at least $1.5 billion and perhaps even higher to subsidize electrical costs. Mr. Speaker, it's not just blackmail now, it's double blackmail. And we should call it by what it is.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May I have the privilege of the floor to briefly respond to the last speaker?
You have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. He said that we should call the Susitna Equity Clause what it is, a blackmail clause, and he referred to it as a double blackmail clause. What I would like to do is say that, indeed, it's not we that is doing the blackmail. It's the four-dam pool that's doing the blackmail, which is a portion of southeast Alaska, and has been since the energy program was developed some years ago under Senate Bill 25 and 26. All that we're asking for in the rest of the state is equity. That's why we call it the equity clause. And I think the last gentleman that spoke knows that.
Representative Cowdery?
Yes, I would like to respond to the representative from Juneau here of the blackmail clause. I guess we've got another one in here in vetoes, that if we don't come up with a solution, that the governor proposed to blackmail us with vetoes. So maybe we've got three or four. Maybe somebody else can add to that. But according to the information that we've been discussing here, it appears to me that we've got another one on line.
Representative Abood.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request the privilege of the floor to speak on motives that will cause trouble in River City. Mr. Speaker,
be very careful of motives, Representative Abood.
I beg your pardon? What?
You have the floor.
Sir?
You have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Been rather a standing situation around the House of Representatives that when one leaves the floor for one reason or another, and we do not question that. and to question the motives of one who does, I think should be severely dealt with. Because, Mr. Speaker, we all, human as we may be, have a certain amount of nature in us, if you will, and sometimes quite a quantity of water, if you will. Now, call of the House or not, standing, riding in an airplane or not, I don't care where one of us may be, we cannot control this only up to a certain point. And for someone that lives someplace in Alaska, and I don't know where in Alaska he lives, to question the motives of me leaving the floor, I think is highly improper, Mr. Speaker. I had no intention of coming back. I got 15 cops out there. And I'd appreciate it if they wouldn't worry about it anymore.
Representative Lindar?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, a privilege of the floor not to speak on the same subject, but to back up one or two previous subjects, if I might.
I assume that would be Sue Sitna.
Yes,
the other floor, Representative Lindar.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have been listening with some joy to everyone's various and sundry concerns, and I actually believe that the people are each doing a very good job of representing their own regions, and that the House as a whole should be proud of its members, that in fact they're trying to come to grips with a very complex and confusing situation. And I speak as an individual who voted against the resolution in the Anchorage caucus the other day, because I do not believe that as it was presented it was in the best interest of the state, but I certainly respect points of views of the other people, and I do not believe that anybody has been deliberately misled in this body. I think that each member has in fact been doing their very best to represent their own district and also to serve the best interest of the state. I think it's just a very confusing subject. So I understand and appreciate when I see the members from Southeastern concerned about the rates in those four dam pool cities. I understand why they would want a power subsidy to subsidize the rates, to keep down the rates. It's absolutely proper that they should want low power rates. Hydro normally has low rates. They have reason to expect it, and they have reason to get it, in my opinion. It's also reasonable to expect that they would want a contribution to equity to be put into their region to hold down those rates. I'd want the same thing for my district, and I believe every member in this body would want it for their district. I can also understand the concern about repealing the Susitna equity clause or about blackmail clause or whatever else any member wishes to call it. That's a very real concern for those of us in the rail belt. We need power. We need to think ahead, and that's a very real possibility for us. And I, for one, am not at all prepared to give up on the Susitna clause, whatever you want to call it, until I know my constituents are going to have enough power. And I think everybody else feels the same way about that. I'm not sure that we need to have $1.5 billion to subsidize rates. May we need more, may we need less, but it's a reasonable thing to worry about and be concerned about. But I think this whole thing is confusing because we've gotten ourselves away from the real problem that we have. I do not believe that we need to subsidize the Southeastern rates. I do not believe that the rates have to be as high as they are proposed to be and as high as the apparent power agreements are going to be. And I do not believe that we need to make equity investments into Southeastern. And I do not believe we need to repeal the Susitna blackmail clause or equity clause. And I do not believe we need to amend the Constitution. And indeed, I agree with my colleague from downtown Anchorage that if we put that to a vote of the people at $1.5 billion or any other magnitude of that level, that it may well go down and leave Anchorage with a shortage of power, which would not be good for Anchorage or the rail belt or the entire state. I think what's happened is that we have been led down the primrose path by members of another body, and I don't mean the other body, the Senate. I'm referring to members of an administrative body. The Alaska Power Authority, for those of you who are not familiar with it, has 7 members on its board. 3 of them are commissioners of the state of Alaska in the Sheffield administration, and there's a 4th member who is the director of the Office of Management and Budget. They control the Alaska Power Authority. Its executive director is the governor's former chief of staff, Mr. Crawford. And they have established the policies, and they are the ones who have basically presented these various alternatives to us, saying that this is our only choice. I don't believe this is our only choice, and I think we are playing the wrong game because we're playing in their field according to their rules, according to their data. And I think the data is basically different. I believe, and I have talked to some of the representatives of the four dam pool communities, that we could sign a power contract right now for lower rates, not the same rates as APA has proposed with subsidies, but lower rates. And those lower rates would be enough to fully service all the bonds that need to be issued without subsidy for power rates and without any more equity investments and without repealing SUSTNA. The only people who have told us that we must repeal SUSTNA and put up all this many millions of dollars are the Alaska Power Authorities, otherwise known as the Commissioners of the Sheffield Administration. They're the ones who have stampeded us into worrying about repealing SUSTNA, having a constitutional amendment, spending millions of dollars, causing the southeastern communities to have higher rates. If, in fact, we could sell those bonds using the money at lower rates of power, then we wouldn't need to do any of this, or we wouldn't need to spend any of that money. And I submit to you that we may well be able to sell those bonds without going through this agony and without the various representatives each carefully worrying about their districts in the state, as I think everyone is doing. I think there's no one in here misleading anyone. Everybody's trying to do the best they can. Our dilemma is that several years ago, an RFP was given out, and the state of Alaska's Alaska Power Authority gave a sole source bond buying contract to one company, the First Boston Company. A couple of years later, the then revenue commissioner had moved over and was now representing a second company, which joined the First Boston Company. Those two companies are our only source of bonds, bond buy. They're the ones who have said we should repeal SUSTNA. They're the ones who said we have to make millions of dollars of equity investments. They're the ones who have said we have to give rate subsidization to the four dam pool communities. They're the ones who have called for higher rates for those communities. And they have done it in the best business tradition of making a lot of money for themselves. I don't fault them for it. They're rational for asking for a good deal on those bonds so when they resell them, they can make a lot of profits. And they've done the right thing. We're the ones who have to be careful that we are also rational and that we don't let them make money at the expense of the people we represent. But in fact, our people get the very best deal. I think our problem is not to repeal SUSTNA or amend the Constitution or appropriate money. Our problem is to have new bond buyers. And until we test the bond market by issuing bonds and seeing if someone will buy them at reasonable rates, maybe with graduated coupons over many years, we have no reason to get ourselves stampeded into this by four members of a seven-member board, all of whom answer to the governor. If we mess up SUSTNA as a result of this, it is solely and strictly on the shoulders of the governor of the state of Alaska, who has caused us to amend our constitution and squander hundreds of millions of dollars. And we should not rush to aid and abet him in that effort, even with the best of interests and even with the best faith efforts that I think everybody's making. We need to go very slowly on this. Thank you.
President Duncan.
Thank you for the applause. Mr. Speaker, I just wanted to correct a couple